7654321. We have ignition. We have liftoff. Out and about is a go. All systems are nominal. Oh, good afternoon, out and abouters. You are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane on 88.1 and 92.3 FM, also streaming from KYRS.org. I am your host, as always, DJ Captain Maeve, and I have my good friend Jeremy Whittington with me in the studio today. Hello, Jeremy.
Hello, Maeve. So excited to be here.
I'm so excited to be with you. It's been so long. But first, everybody knows what we have to do. We are closing in on the end of On Tyranny, 20 Lessons from the 20th Century by Timothy Snyder. It's our little, like a little Bible reading, Jeremy. We do this
every week. I love that.
Yeah. So, and of course, if you're going to do something like that, you have to have appropriate music. So we're going to cue the music, and then I'm going to just do a short little reading from this. Number 15. Contribute to good causes. Be active in organizations, political or not, that express your own view of life. Pick a charity or two and set up autopay. Then you will have made a free choice that supports civil society and helps others do good. All right. So in there, concludes the lesson.
It's a good lesson.
Thank you. Yeah. And of course, Timothy Snyder dives much deeper into it, but Jeremy, how are you?
I'm doing well.
You're so busy now. Jeremy, you know, a lot of you probably know Jeremy from his work at Stage Left Theater, but you took a bigger job, really, as Spokane Arts Program Director. I don't know, is it a busier job? Probably not as busy, but...
You know, it's different. It's still one of those kind of jack-of-all-trade jobs where I get to be involved in a lot of different style of projects. Same thing, you know, in my theater life.
Yeah.
This one, you know, I actually work 40 hours a week and not 60.
Oh my
so
gosh.
It's a little easier in that regard. Yeah. A little less physical demanding. I'm not building sets anymore. Still designing sets, but
yeah.
not building any right now.
Yeah. That job was so nebulous before. I mean, you'd be covered in paint and trying to raise funds.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And all
was,
that stuff.
It was fun, though. That was the best 5 years of my life.
Oh my goodness. It was, sure was a, I mean, I think people, somebody could write a book about this, especially during the COVID
Absolutely.
Time, you know, yeah. what you were responsible for. So, Jeremy, I think a lot of people don't even know about Spokane Arts. And what is Spokane Arts?
Oh, wow. Well, so Spokane Arts is a nonprofit organization that is the contracted partner of the city of Spokane. So we manage the 33% admissions tax that comes to the city on, like when you get a Best of Broadway ticket, you get that little charge, that surcharge uh-huh. at the end, that fee goes to the city as in the form of a tax. So
okay.
33% is collected of that, and our contracts with the city are to manage those funds. So
okay.
that goes everywhere from the Saga Grant, which is our biggest effort annually, three times a year that people know the most about. We've now given out over $2.5 million
wow.
to artists and art organizations. That does include the ARPA funds that were given out during COVID. But over $1.5 million have been given out just through Saga alone, which is pretty impressive for a small organization to do.
And so that's, and I think people can go to the website, right? I mean, if they want to know
Absolutely.
How to
yep.
apply for
SpokaneArts.org.
Is there, you know, do you think that, is it, as far as who gets awarded, is it really like, I guess the strata of artists, like probably the tippity top artists or what, I mean, How does that work? I mean, as far as who gets
awarded? It kind of varies from session to session. Like I said, we have three every year, February, June, and October. And it depends on who applies, really. We get vastly different levels of experience, different levels of where you are in your career as an artist or an arts organization, how much money you're looking for, what the scope of the project is. It kind of really varies based on who submits. So some rounds will have, 40 organizations that all we know all of them. We've heard of all of them at least. And then we'll have rounds where we have 80 and we haven't heard of more than half of them, which is kind of cool too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And each time those decisions are made by a collective group of people who are brought together from various different aspects of both art and government to be the adjudicators of those funds.
Do the people who receive the funds, do they have to be residents of the city, be based in the city? Or?
No. We're actually, we're pretty regional. Mm-hmm. Last round, we granted money to Music Boosters for a school out near Liberty Lake that really needed it for their marching band. So it really is more regional than city.
Okay. And as far as being the program director, what does that job entail? What does your job entail?
I get asked this many times.
It's a great title.
I direct the programs.
Yes, all the programs. Yeah. Get printed up. Right. Yours, yeah.
It kind of varies. I started at Spoken Arts in the middle of June last year and delved straight into the Signal Box program that we have, where artists submit artwork, it's approved through the Arts Commission, and then we have them wrapped around the city. You'll see those steel boxes that you see on the corners that have artwork on them. That's our doing. So that was my first project that I jumped into.
Okay.
Then I moved into the Spoken Arts Awards that we threw at Hamilton Studios last year that recognizes organizations and individuals in Spokane who are contributing to the arts ecosystem in exciting and new ways. In the wintertime, I was really focused on Poetry Out Loud, which is a national endowment for the arts program that is run in Washington State by Arts Washington.
Oh, sure.
Uh-huh. Yep. And we are the regional hosts. So we're the Eastern Washington region. So I got to host kids for all over the region from various high schools who came to a poetry recital competition. And our gal won and went to Sydney Frost, and she went to Tacoma and competed and won state, and now she is heading to DC to compete for nationals. And she did "There Are No Kings in America." That's the poem she read.
Oh, nice!
Oh, it was intense and poignant.
Boy, I'd say that's right on the bullseye. Well, we'll see.
Interesting to see what happens.
Yeah,
we'll
see who judges that one.
So either be first or last.
Well,
she's amazing.
Can a kid be like a poet? Is there a junior poet laureate or anything?
Well, that's interesting you ask, because the current Spokane poet laureate, Mary Smith, that job description also falls under our kind of bailiwick of Spokane Arts, along with the Arts Commission in selecting the poet laureate. And that's currently a 2-year position. So Mary's in the middle of her second year. And one of the biggest things she wanted to advance was youth poetry. And so she is starting the Youth Poet Laureate program, and it's slowly begun. The night markets that happen over in Kendall Yards every Wednesday night from 5 to 8, we now have youth poet slams over there from 6:30 to 7. Yeah, it's twice a month right now, so not this Wednesday, tomorrow, which I'm probably dating us on the radio, but
it's okay.
But we'll be back on June 11th with more youth poets from around the region, and they come and read poems to a gathered group of people, and it's been very well received. So then we're going to have Mary do some workshops in association with Spark Central there in Kendall Yards for young poets, and of the aggregate of people that show up for that and participate in that, one poet will be selected by the Arts Commissioners to be the first Spokane Youth Poet Laureate.
Oh, how cool would
that
be?
Yeah, very cool.
So, I mean, so those are people, it's funny, when you go to a city, at least when I go to a city, the first places I usually hit are the art museums, or if they have outdoor sculptures, or if I'm interested in the architecture. We just came back from Chicago a couple weeks ago, took the train over there. But, that's the first place we hit were the museums, especially the art museums. And I just think that a city really gets defined, especially by the public art. And I just think about this this the Kendall Yards night market thing, where people are just out there, you know, let's go to this, and now they're exposed to poetry. And that's got to be a really cool experience for everybody involved.
Absolutely. It's really thrilling.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think is... Oh, let me back up a little bit. So, First Fridays, is that part of your thing too, as far as...
So we're not in charge of the citywide event that is First Friday. I'm part of my job is curating the Chase Gallery at City Hall. A lot of people don't know that we have a renowned art gallery in the basement of City Hall. It's an odd location, but it's a really great space. And every First Friday, we have a new showing of artists, and they're usually there to talk to people coming in. And now we've incorporated live music. So we had DJ Spicy Ketchup last time.
Wow.
Yep, we have another DJ this time. We've had Tanya Ballman has played music in December for us. So yeah, we're trying to activate the space in new and exciting ways to get people used to coming to the basement of City Hall, because it's just an odd, hey, let's go to City Hall for an art show.
Well, and it seems like First Friday was one of those things that COVID kind of took a hit on as well, because I remember pre-COVID, it was, you'd go downtown and downtown was just bustling with First Friday stuff, and there was food being served and all that. And it seems like that's sort of been pulled off a little bit.
It feels to me like it's coming back.
Yeah.
I mean, just this year seems like a different kind of energy. I'm not sure if it's, you know, in response to the political climate that we're in, that I think artists are getting louder, which is always nice.
Yeah.
And people are getting more prolific about talking about what they need as a community.
Well, yeah, I'll be down at the Spokane Arts Art School.
Oh, cool.
And their gallery for First Friday. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You kind of talked a little bit about the political stuff. How do you see things changing with this political landscape? I mean, for me, I was going to show you this book I'll show it to you right here because it's within arm's reach. I'll hold it up to the microphone so everyone can hear it.
Yeah.
It's called Anti-Fascism in American Art, and I've got it on A Books, I think. And it's just a beat up old textbook, but it's really fascinating. About wish the color, pictures were in color, but about sort of the evolution of art as a response to fascism by American artists.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what do you see art evolving a little bit in this latest round that we're trying to...
Well, I mean, I think it's inevitable, yeah. If you look back through all of human history, if you want to know what really happened, you look to the art of the time. You look to the sculptures, the paintings, the poems, the books.
Yeah.
You look to the creatives who were there creating their response to what their world was. So we get glimpses of history with art. Not only glimpses, but more real, you know, real looks at history than we might get by just studying a factual history book.
Yeah, and people forget that, you know, the whole... You know, they came for the socialists, et cetera, et cetera. But artists are really people that totalitarian regimes really hate.
You know, that's quite true.
And I think it must be because art maybe hits people on a level that's really even beyond any sort of cognitive thing. You know, it hits them in the
feels. It's visceral, yeah. It's soulful. Art doesn't have necessarily a logic to it.
Yeah.
It's all about emotion and speaking to our inner cores. And that's hard for fascist regimes to accept, because you don't want people thinking too much or feeling too much.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And I think that, like, I think so much art empathies at the empathy and truth, I think, are really combined together, are really what, for me, what makes art. And I just think that, you know, empathy is under attack. You know, there's these folks who call themselves Christians, when I put that in quotation marks, say that, you know, really Jesus was against empathy, which goes against everything that we
crazy.
Know about
so
Jesus.
So bizarre.
but it's like, so I think that empathy that creates art also conveys empathy. You know, to be moved by a scene that you see painted, or be moved at a play.
Oh my gosh!
Or a song.
I will cry at a Folgers commercial.
Like, yeah, me too.
If it's well done, you know, good art is good art.
Yeah, for Mrs. Olson.
Why did you squeeze the Charmin?
Why, Valdez?
Why?
But, you know, but it's true. I mean, I think that they just don't like that. And yeah. So now you've been an artist. How long do you, when did you say to yourself, you know, I think I might be an artist? At what age?
I was 5. I remember it distinctly. Yeah. I did a book report on green eggs and ham in kindergarten. And it was one of those little folded half pieces of paper. And yes. You kind of summarize the story and you draw pictures. And my pictures were pretty darn good.
Oh, good.
And they were colored, you know, with crayon and everything. And my teacher sent it home to my mom and said that I had to redo it because I was not allowed to trace out of books. And my mom scheduled a meeting and she goes, he didn't trace anything out of any book. Like, this is his artwork. Jeremy, sit down and shower. So I remember sitting down.
No kidding.
Yeah, I had to draw, like, to prove myself to my kindergarten teacher.
What was your teacher's response to that?
I can't remember, but I remember feeling very proud and safe that my mom stuck up for me.
I was going to say, what a good mom.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What a good mom to do
that. For sure. And at the time, you know, we were living with my grandparents in down in Anaheim, California, and they were really big in the theater scenes and the movie scenes. And so I got to go and audition for like Little Rascals and commercials. They dragged me everywhere I didn't get any of them, none of them. But I do remember singing at USO shows when I was 6 and 7 in blue, baby blue velour pants and a little blue sequence vest and bow tie. And I was singing Donny Osmond and Elton John songs when I was 6 and 7.
No kidding.
Yeah. Wow. So I've always been a little bit of a ham and a little bit of a performer and an artist. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was born into a family where I did similar things, you know, entered talent shows and big in impressions and couldn't sing and act and all that stuff. And my family was basically one of these, like, you just keep your head down. You don't draw attention to yourself and you just hopefully no one will hurt you. And you know,
and look who you've become. Well, you so keep your head down. That's how I describe you.
Yeah, I know. And it's that started at a young age. Yeah. Now, so what do you eventually, it sounds like you kept on the same course as far as your artwork, your actual physical, like drawing and painting and
I've always fancied myself an illustrator. I used to, you'll get a kick out of this. So I graduated in 1989 and in like 86, Cabbage Patch dolls were the big thing. My sister like was in love with Cabbage Patch dolls. It was the rave. So I started drawing Cabbage Patch dolls, but they had butt faces and they were very cartoon-like. And I started drawing them for people at school. I got in trouble for it. They were called anal babies. And everybody wanted one. I did the whole cheerleading team. I drew the whole cheerleading team. that's made them into anal babies, yeah.
That's predated the Garbage Pail Kids.
It did, just
barely. They probably got the idea from you.
I think they did. I do.
Let's get that royalty check going here.
So I've always illustrated, when I got into college, I went to Ohio University and studied theater there, only because the first guy I fell in love with, my first boy crush, was a theater major. And so that got me involved in theater for 3 years at Ohio University. And crazy.
Yeah. And and people, if they haven't seen Jeremy act, phenomenal.
Oh gosh.
Phenomenal and fun. Okay. I've got a break for our 20 minute after the hour stuff, but I got to play a little music because I haven't loaded up anything yet. So I'm going to play a little music. Let's see, what are we going to play? Oh, how about some Lord Huron. Let's play a little Lord Huron. We'll do that. Well, I won't play the whole song, just long enough for me to get things loaded up here. The sky was falling, the time was bending. received support from Boots Bakery and Lounge, specializing in vegan bistro fare and gluten-free baked goods. Located in the Saranac Commons, 19 West Main Street in Spokane. Open 7 a.m. through 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. through 5 p.m. Sundays. Full menu and information at bootsbakery.com.
Support for Out and About comes from Eastern Washington University Running Start, where high school students can earn tuition-free credit before graduating. Applications at ewu.edu/runningstart.
Support for Out and About comes from the nonprofit Unitarian Universalist Church of Spokane, a liberal religious community supporting ideals of social justice, environmental stewardship, and freedom of thought for persons of all ages, races, ethnicity, and sexual preferences. The church offers two Sunday services as well as children and youth programs. Information is at uuspokane.org or by calling 509-325-6383.
Out and About receives support from the Northwest Museum of Arts and Culture. The MAC presents Samurai Sunrise Sunset through June 1st, 2025. This exhibition features armor, weaponry, and personal items of Japan's samurai class. Located at 2316 West 1st Avenue in Spokane's historic Browns Edition. More information is available at northwestmuseum.org.
Hey there, folks. Join me for a musical trip along Americana Avenue. Now on Wednesday evenings from 6 to 8 p.m. Hear the greatest progressive songwriters from yesterday and today. Each week, I'll feature a specific artist and a vinyl spin of the week. It's music that plays to the human condition, Wednesdays at 6 on Thin Air Community Radio.
Hey, this is DJ Downlow from Inside the Hype Radio. Thousands of people choose KYRS as their radio station every week, and we want you to be a part of our family. Just text GIVE KYRS to the number 44321 and make KYRS your radio station.
Hey, music lovers and crate diggers. Get ready to spin into summer at the KYRS Lilac City Record Sale. Join us June 21st from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Spokane Central Library for a treasure trove of musical magic. We're talking vinyl records, 45s, LPs, CDs, DVDs, concert posters, and vintage t-shirts, all under one roof. Want first dibs on the good stuff? Early admission is just $10 from 11 to noon. Or come browse from noon to 4 for only $2. Looking to sell your own stash? Booths are just $40 and going fast. Email vinyl at kyrs.org to reserve yours. That's the KYRS Lilac City Record Sale, June 21st, 11 to 4, at the Spokane Central Library, 906 West Main Avenue, brought to you by KYRS Thin Air Community Radio and the Spokane Central Library. Come dig the music and find your next favorite record.
Okay, we are back, and you're listening to KYRS, Medical Lake Spokane, and this is Mabe. I'm talking to my buddy, Jeremy Whittington from Spokane Arts, and we are talking about arts in Spokane.
Imagine.
Yes. Now, what are some things that people might not realize that the arts do for the city?
Well, you know, the arts factor into every aspect of daily life. I mean, you think about architecture, for instance, that we were talking about on the break. That's art. Architecture is art. Floral arrangement is art. Fashion is art. Food is art. Cocktails are art. Yeah. All of these things are art, and people don't seem to associate those things with art. We think art, and we think, Mona Lisa or the Statue of David. That's very limiting when we talk about art. So when you ask what does it affect, or what effect it has on our city, I would say every aspect, to one degree or another, is affected by art. A city, I love that you said that when you go to a city, the first thing you do is go to museums.
Yeah.
because you can tell a lot by a city on how it invests in its arts ecosystem, really.
Yeah.
You know, how is art valued? How prolific are artists in the city? And that can be anywhere from a sound engineer, to a dressmaker, really. And Spokane has its ups and downs when it comes to all of that, I think. Yeah. I think we're really fortunate to have a mayor who is an arts mayor who supports the arts in the city.
And I think that along those lines, with architecture, I think architecture is such a great example because, when you come to Spokane and you see our city hall, which used to be Montgomery Ward's, but it's still a beautiful building, right?
It is.
I mean, it's a beautiful building in itself. And I always think that these cities that go, I think if we just put up some double wides would probably be the most cost effective means to have. But it's like they miss the point.
Yeah.
They miss the point that we're a community and it's we do things to have a good life.
That's
and
right.
Part of that good life is looking at things that are beautiful and also just the message that it gives people that a government that's housed, I think, in a beautiful building is a government that tries to be beautiful, tries to do beautiful things for people.
Agreed.
Is full of humans, And I think, especially with this advancing age of AI, I really think art is going to become so much more important.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's one of the benefits of having the Chase Gallery in the basement of City Hall is it's right outside of City Council chambers.
Yeah.
So everyone that walks into City Council, whether they're a City Council member or a member of the city government or someone from the community coming to speak or to ask questions or to grill our politicians,
yeah,
have to walk through an art gallery to get there. I think that's kind of nice. I think that that's a special thing that we can do for the council members who are working hard, I think all of them, to better our city. And they walk out and they're confronted immediately with art. I think that that's a nice way to start their day and their conversations.
Yeah, I think it's, I think that's why I like churches that are churches. I don't like when churches are plants, we're at the worship center.
Yeah.
I mean, it's up to, that's a personal thing, of course,
but
it's like, I think that, when you come into City Hall and you see that art, you go, it's like, this city is about people.
We value art.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of which, one of the Saga grant recipients we had in here earlier, the botanical alchemists for doing Brush on the Bluff.
Right.
And that was from Spokane Arts Saga grant. And it, for me, I'm out there painting, but the big thing about it is there's so many people. I think thousands of people just wandering around asking you about your art. And they're also going to a place that is, the trail system on the bluff, which a lot of people don't know about. And that in itself is so beautiful. And then you juxtapose all the little tents and shelters and people painting or doing other artistic pursuits that I just think, this is so cool.
That's really cool.
They get to see this. And do you think, are there some other kind of things that you think where people get to, where there's kind of this cross section, of art and fill in the blank, art and,
art and food at Nito Burrito. They have Tuesday night poetry slams there. That's a perfect example.
Yeah.
Anytime you have a musician in a space that isn't a music hall, that's an intersection of art and something else.
Yeah.
I think that those intersectionalities that bring new insights to our world around us, when we're involved in them, when you go to get a burrito and you hear this 17-year-old kid spouting awesome poetry from the depth of their soul, that's a different experience than driving through Taco Bell.
Yes. I think that's a great example. And I just think, back to the Brush on the Bluff thing, you think about people who come down there to ride their bicycles, and they have no idea that this show is going on. If nothing else, they're just like, they get home and they're like, you wouldn't believe what was going on down there. And I love that. I love street performances.
Absolutely.
I love things that kind of break through the normalcy of every day. I just think those moments are transformative, and I don't care if you're, you know, call yourself a creative or not. I think people are really, it's food for what you need to do and whatever your job is.
Absolutely. And you know, another Saga recipient recently, Live From Somewhere, that comes to mind, because they take musical performers and music acts and bands and film them in odd locations. They started during COVID doing them in abandoned warehouses or ruined buildings, like, and they've done them all over the place. You should really check
them out. Oh, I got to check that out. It's really intriguing. What's the name of them again?
Live From Somewhere.
And I suppose they probably have a website.
Oh, they do. Yeah, they're great. Yeah, we recently funded them.
And speaking of websites, I suppose this might be a good juncture to tell people how they can find out more about Spokane Arts.
Sure, yeah. You can go to SpokaneArts.org. We have a lot of tabs right now. Our website's in the beginning stages of reconstruction. So if you get there and something's under construction soon, come back and visit us in a month or two.
Okay. Okay, I'm gonna have some generalized, some hard data type questions.
Ooh.
And some more touchy-feely ones here. So, is there a pretty good strata of people who would call themselves artists in Spokane who would say, I get up in the morning to create art?
Well, I think it's a little tricky that you're asking me, because for the last, 10 years, that has been my life. Mm-hmm. And that has percolated other people in my circles to be those kind of people as well. So yeah. I find that the arts community in Spokane is vastly larger than I would have expected, than I have been exposed to. And I think that now that there's more discussion about things like fashion as art and culinary art and things like that, I think that more people are starting to recognize the artistry that they put into something that they didn't originally consider to be an art expression.
Yeah.
And I think that's a beautiful thing for your soul, when you realize that you are co-creating with the universe something special.
And why do you think we do that? Why do we create art? I mean, and this is not just some new phenomenon where people were like, oh, we became an agrarian society, and so people had more time on their hands. I mean, the earliest peoples created art. That's part of being a human being. Why do you think that is? Why do people make art?
I think it all stems from storytelling. I think any aspect of art that you look at stems from a basic our caveman need to express an idea to someone. And the easiest way to express an idea is through symbology, through putting something in their stomach, through wearing something as attire to present something to someone else. All of those things that make up human civilization, that differentiates us from animals, to me, is the need for expression.
Yeah.
And I think that is just an innate part of humanity. And I think that when we lose that part of ourselves, or when that part of ourselves has never really been tapped into or nurtured, we don't view art as something that is us, that is individual to us, and we see it as an outside element. And so I think that that can cause a lot of people to have opinions about art that aren't necessarily true or real in some aspect, because if you analyze anyone's life, if you just say, what do you do during a 24-hour period?
Yeah.
And they told you everything that they did, you would find 24 things that are them being a creative.
Yeah, right. Right.
And I think recognizing and celebrating that as an individual helps us collectively as a civilization communicate better and grow in new and exciting ways. Yeah. Everything that's ever been engineered, the cars that we drive, driving my big old Jeep down the street, it doesn't seem like a piece of art, but somebody designed the curvature of that hub. You know what I mean? Like somebody designed that.
And you picked out that color.
And I picked out the color. Yeah.
Yeah. I just think that, art is such a, puts you in touch with the truth so much. And I mean, it can be an extreme weird work of fiction, but there's a truthfulness that comes out in you. And I think, kind of going back to politics a little bit, I think that right now we have this federal administration that's based on liars. I mean, they can't open up their mouth without lying. I mean, everything, they've totally devalued what they say, because there's nothing that's trustworthy that they say. And I think that I think that's probably why in the first Trump administration, there were so many drugs that were passed out, because I just think people need to be numbed to that, you know, because of your the effect it has. No matter how much you try to get rid of your humanity, there's still a little bit of humanity that's going to feel ashamed by the lies and the awful things you do. And I think that art is kind of maybe like the anti-drug, you know, art it reconnects you.
There's our commercial art, the anti-drug.
I mean, it kind of like, it connects you back to the truth. And right. And I just think that as human beings, we have to be, you know, there's a reason why every story works that has a villain, which I don't understand how this group that's up there now can watch a movie now and say, I just imagine them watching like Raiders of the Lost Ark and saying, man, what's their problem with the Nazis? They seem to be kind of angry with the Nazis. I don't get it. I mean, so anyway, I just think we're so fine-tuned to this thing that art really is not, I mean, personally, I think that's one of the reasons I keep making it, you know, is just because I feel like I have to do something and I feel like this is a good thing to do.
You know, it feeds my soul. It feeds your soul.
Yeah.
It can feed anyone's soul if you tap into that part of yourself too. I don't know where I was going with that sentence, but
well, we're getting kind of in the weeds. Yeah. You know, and so if, let's say somebody's listening to this conversation, and I know you are listening, and they were like, you know, I've always wanted to pick up a pen and pencil, or I wanted to learn how to do this. Can they go to the Spokane Arts website and kind of like find things, you know, or is that more like a long, the art school type of?
Yeah, I think that would be more along the arts school. We are a connective tissue for sure in the arts community. Yeah. So if somebody, and they often do, call us and say, hey, we are looking to do this, or I want to do this, or how do you do this?
Yeah.
We definitely are the connective tissue that puts them in touch with other organizations or individuals that can either teach them or mentor them or help them or come out and inspect something for them. There's a lot of things that we do to kind of connect various aspects of art and business and government and individuals, I think in pretty unique ways.
Yeah, that's cool. I had painted this painting of this building that was on fire, and it was a 1925 fire at the American Paint and Wallpaper Company. And I was just kind of like looking through old newspapers, and I found this picture. That was pretty cool. But so then I kind of did a little dive on this American Paint and Wallpaper. It used to be kind of over by the Davenport. But this company, they sold, of course, paint and wallpaper, but but they sold a lot of artist paints there. They sold a lot of oils.
Okay. Yeah.
And they actually had a gallery up on the third floor that featured people's paintings, because that was a big thing that people did back then.
Sure.
And so then it was like, you know, this has been going on in Spokane for such a long time. I think it was in 2004, I think, was when Spokane Art Supply had celebrated their 50th anniversary.
Wow.
So, I mean, this is part of who we are. Yeah, this is not absolutely something new or foo-foo or whatever you want to call it. I mean, this is what we need to do.
You know, I think you're absolutely right. I think Spokane has always been an art city. I think that a lot of people don't want to concentrate on that or don't recognize it, maybe, that we're surrounded by art and artists. And when we open our eyes and see what's being created around us by such inspiring individuals of every age, color, creed, denomination.
Right.
There's always something being created around us.
Oh, absolutely. And things that, like you just mentioned, the performing, you know, in the art, performing music in a place. I had no idea.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I suppose there's probably TikTok videos on that out there someplace.
Yep,
I
you can
imagine.
See videos for sure.
What was the thing that surprised you most when you took this job?
That's like,
I wasn't prepared for this. Or maybe you were gladly surprised by it.
No. You know me. I'm a high energy individual. I function in always doing stuff. That's just part of who I am. If I'm sitting still too long, I get antsy. So the transition from stage left to Spokane Arts wasn't that difficult for me, because it was instantly, you have a plate full of very different tasting food from all over, and you need to get to all of them in this scheduled amount of time and make sure everyone's happy. So, you know, it kind of is already up my alley, what I was doing in the past. This is just, instead of producing a play every month or working with actors and directors and designers, you know, I'm working with musicians and seamstresses and cooks, and I'm finding that to be really rewarding.
Yeah, well, you're so used to working with directors and actors and set designers and costumers and all that. Do you, when you start working, and I'm sure you probably don't have a lot of interaction with the artists themselves. Do you have a lot of like one-on-one with the artists?
You know, I do to some degree. Yeah. With the poets, I was connected to all, I'm always connected to all the poets I work with. The Chase Gallery, I meet and talk with for months sometimes, the artists that we're bringing to the Chase Gallery. It is a little bit different experience than working in the theater was, because I was entrenched in the trenches.
Yes.
And now it's more, I'm going to help you meet this person so you can go there at this time and do that.
Is there something that's different, let's say, about like working with poets? Do you find the group, and I know this is generalizations, but you know, we've got like 8 minutes to kill here, 10 minutes to kill. Is there something that is different, like say with poets, that's with painters, with actors? Do you see some continuity, but also some like things?
Absolutely. There's, you know, I think all of those that you mentioned, I was trying to think of what was different. At the first, my brain went to, well, the poets are much more expressive with how they're feeling about things how they feel in any given moment, you know? But then I thought, well, that's not exactly true. They're not more expressive. I think that they just have maybe a handle on their words a little bit better than perhaps a painter might.
Okay.
Because painters are feeling the same kind of feelings and the same emotions when they're creating their art. But a lot of times visual art is meant to be seen and then interpreted however you want.
Yes.
And it's a little different hearing words, I think, come out of people's mouths. Yes, you can interpret them to your satisfaction or your detriment or whatever, but they are words that mean something.
Yeah.
Now, when you look at a piece of art, that art doesn't always mean the same things, rarely means the same things to everyone.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that's true with perhaps performing arts as well. I think that all of us come with ego problems. Our egos are either too big or too small. Yeah. Always, we're in constant pendulum fluctuation of thinking this is the best thing I've ever done, and I never want anyone to see this.
I'm so bad.
I'm guilty of it almost. Yeah. You know, on a calendar basis.
on an hourly basis.
So, but I do think one thing that differentiates the aggregate of artists from people who don't consider themselves artists is this need for expression of some sort, whether it's verbal, visual, musical, anything really, tactile.
Yeah.
There's a need to express something that's within us that must come out.
Yeah.
We can't deny it. It has to come out.
Right.
And one of the things that we, you know, strive to do at Spoken Arts, and I think any artists in a city where we're mentoring and bringing up the next generation of artists, is to ensure that they're able to express this. Yeah. So how do we get them the supplies in their hands that they need? How do we find them the space that they need? How do we connect them with someone who's done this before and can give them some pointers? You know, there's so much to be said for artistic mentorship, I think. You know, where we all as humans have art in us, for sure. That's not a question. We have it in us. It's how we choose to express it. And I think a lot of people who are not gifted the ability of truth in their young lives kind of have to stifle those expressions. And then that becomes just this ball of shame and barriers around my heart, right?
Right.
And so I try to, this is aside from being an artist, but I try to have grace for people where they're at in their life. And if I can talk to them about art, if that's how the conversation goes, A lot of times we can get to the root of some things that have really stifled growth as an individual and as a community.
Well, I think that was beautifully said. And I think that there's so many of us are fearful to risk.
Oh, gosh.
You know, I mean, like somebody's going to think this is awful, or I'm an awful actor, or I can't write worth a darn, or this looks stupid what I painted. Yeah. No one's going to like
it. Oh, gosh.
And
I think we all suffer from that, even us quote unquote accomplished artists.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I just think comes a point where you just go, you know what? I think it'd be funny if everybody hated this. You know?
I love your work because of that. You don't give a crap. It's so great.
Yeah.
And it comes across that way. Yeah. That message comes through your art.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun for me.
100%.
You know, I want to have fun.
That's right.
Yeah.
I love that these memes that have circulated over the last couple of years online are things like, you're an artist even if you don't sell your art. You're an artist even if no one sees it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like those are qualifiers that I don't think, I know I didn't believe in my youth that I was an artist unless I was quote unquote famous or made some money doing it still waiting for that mark.
Well, right. You know, and I have run into people that would say, they'll ask me, how long have you been painting? I'm like, well, really only for, I'll on and off, but seriously, probably like the last 6 or 7 years.
Right.
And how long have you been painting? My whole life. And I've made money only as an artist. I've made my entire, and then our paintings go up for sale and mine sells for more than theirs.
That's interesting,
so I think
isn't
that's
it?
Something that's an encouraging thing for people to realize that, you know, you don't know the value of what you're doing until you do it. And certainly
so true.
It certainly isn't money. To me, it's like, well, that's funny or it's nice, but it's like, it's not about that because, you know, I had a nice career doing something else. So,
yeah, right.
Yeah. But if you were able to wave your magic wand, which I see you brought, everywhere, yes. How would you envision Spokane as far as an art city?
Oh gosh, I think that we're blessed to have some incredible sculptures. Visit Spokane has a great sculpture walk pamphlet. If you go to their website, visitspokane.org, it's so good.
Okay.
And they have printed programs too that you can pick up at the Chase Gallery at City Hall.
Okay.
But we're lucky to have sculptures. We're lucky to have some murals. But you know, we took our honeymoon last year in Iceland, and the city of Reykjavik is just murals everywhere on people's houses, on businesses, everywhere. Gorgeous and what some people would probably call amateur art, right?
Yeah.
But beautiful art is celebrated in that city. And I think that if I were to wave a magic wand, many, many more bare-walled businesses in Spokane would have murals on them. I think that just beautifies the city in ways that you look around and not only are you amazed by the architecture, but also look at this lady releasing doves into the sunset or something, you know?
Yeah.
And I love the festivals that we have. I love the events that we have down the park are wonderful. Music everywhere. Like, yes, let's have buskers on every street corner. I am all for that.
Yes.
I'm going to wave my wand and their hats will be filled with $20 bills, you know?
Yes.
Like, yeah, totally.
Yeah. I love that you talk about that the art doesn't necessarily have to be what you'd say professional, because I subscribe to a magazine, which I'm blanking on the name of right now, but it's a journal of outsider art around the world.
Oh, yeah. Very cool.
And I love it. And it's the people who get basically possessed to create these giant art installations that are just weird and wonderful, that I think we need some of that here. You know, we need, like you said, murals that are necessary. Maybe just like, I don't know what it means, but what is the one, not the Lord of Love, whatever it is, the one that's on the side of the building downtown with
King of Glory.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
I don't,
with the sword with tongue.
The sword tongue. I just think it's so weird and so well done.
Yeah,
and it's like,
it really
we
is.
Need more of that. You know?
We really do.
Yes, the king. Yeah. But anyway, I think that would be really cool. You know, and we just have a couple minutes left, and so maybe we're going to get this a little bit of short shrift, but, you know, the Spokane Arts was in the news lately because there has been a movement by Mayor Woodward to bring it back into the city.
Mayor Brown.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mayor yep. Brown, sorry. Yeah. Yeah, Mayor Brown, yeah, to bring it back into the city, the Spokane Arts, and then there was, now it sounds like Spokane Arts is sort of talking about they would like to stay their own entity.
Yeah, you know, it's all of it's an intriguing concept. And yeah. I think that we are very fortunate to have Lisa Brown as someone who does support arts and artists in our community. She's at many events all the time. She's all over
yeah.
the place.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
And I think the idea of having an arts department at the city is crucial for any city, for sure.
Yeah,
I think that the timing and swiftness with which things were going to have to happen was a little difficult
yeah.
for on both sides to try yeah. to figure out. So I think that both things are true and valid and are going to continue to work alongside each other. People can ask my boss for more information if they want to.
Perfect.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
And what is something that people should probably keep their eye out for that's going to be coming up for that Spokane Arts is behind right now?
Oh, gosh. What am I in the middle of right now? So we have our first Friday event, Portraits from Within. It's four emerging female artists at the Chase Gallery. That first Friday is this Friday from 5 to 7:30 at the Chase at City Hall. We're also gearing up for our annual Arts Awards. This is the 47th annual Arts Awards in Spokane.
Wow.
Yeah, I just started doing some research to find out when this all started, and it was 47 years ago. So that'll be held at the Myrtle Woolston Theater on Gonzaga's campus this year. So it's a big venue. It's a big event. Our theme is homecoming. So we're encouraging, there might be a marching band. Who knows?
Oh, yeah.
We're encouraging people to wear their homecoming dresses and corsages yeah. and dress to impress.
Whatever.
You think I'm growing this mullet because I love mullets? I'm growing it because it matches my senior photo.
Yeah, it's going to look good. Do you have the leisure suit lined up? Maybe more my era,
yeah.
I suppose. Yeah,
I wasn't leisure suit. Ours was the feathered bangs and mullets.
Yes. Yeah. And then you also have the Pride gallery,
yes,
which
absolutely.
Will be coming up.
Yeah, Pride Gallery 2025, which you're a part of. I'm so happy about that. That'll be at the Pavilion during Pride. It starts next Thursday and will be open to the public through Saturday. So come down and see 29 queer artists displaying their work, all different kinds. We have some sculpture, we have some fashion, we have paintings, all sorts of great things to see down there on the inside of the Pavilion during Pride.
Okay, very good. Well, yeah, anything else? Any parting shots before we go?
Gosh, no. It's just always fun to sit and chat with you.
Likewise, Jeremy. Well, I want to remind people and that they are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane on 88.1 and 92.3 FM. And I thank you, Jeremy, for being here with me today. And thank you to all my listeners out there. And get out there and enjoy the arts. It's beautiful. You can be outside and enjoy art.
Yeah, create something.
Yeah, create something. All right, here we go.
right-wing routinely demonizes family-friendly policies of liberals as, quote, social engineering. But look out. Here come those same politicians putting on MAGA hard hats and firing up their political bulldozers to push one of the most arrogant and intrusive social schemes imaginable. They intend to re-engineer the American family. Called pronatalists, they want all of us to conform to a Christian nationalist family structure, specifically a dominant man married to a subservient stay-at-home woman having beaucoup children. Not a couple of kiddos, but 6, 12, or more. For example, extremist MAGA Senator Josh Hawley has become a cheerleader for a federal policy to entice women to quit work, stay home, and have more babies. He proposes a tax credit of $5,000 per child, gushing that this would cause working families to exclaim, "Oh my gosh, we can actually raise our kids." Well, gosh, right back at you, Josh. Just giving birth can cost more than $5,000, and raising a child is multiples above that every year. So you want to take away a mom's job and her income and add thousands in costs to the family budget in exchange for a government tax credit? The slickest loan sharks aren't that diabolical. Oh, wait, right-wing pronatalists have another government incentive to jack up birth rates. Incredibly, Trump officials have proposed a, quote, National Medal of Motherhood for women who have 6 or more children. Wow, what should that medal look like, be made of, and say? And when and where should it be worn? Also, will unmedaled women be socially ostracized? This is Jim Hightower saying, if right-wingers actually wanted to help families, they'd be backing family-level wages, free child care, and Medicare for all. Everything else is political BS. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you subscribers to Jim Hightower's Lowdown on Substack. Find us at jimhightower.substack.com. Let's say you like shrimp. Whether you go for a chain restaurant's happy hour shrimp boil or a pricey plate of shrimp a la grandioso at Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort, a good question to ask is, where do they get their shrimp? Even if the restaurant has an ocean view and a shrimp boat out front, chances are its crustaceans come from industrial aquaculture farms thousands of miles away in India, Ecuador, Vietnam, and Indonesia. Astonishingly, our country now imports 94% of the shrimp we eat. Astonishing because our oceans have an abundance of top-quality shrimp, and we are blessed with highly skilled shrimping families. Worse, those foreign industrial operations financed by Wall Street and global profiteers are infamous for using forced labor, banned antibiotics, and destructive environmental methods. Then, they dump their grossly cheap product into the U.S. market, pushing out our superior quality domestic product and devastating entire shrimping communities. Yet, notice that restaurants